right, welcome to another episode of the Innovativeness Imperative. I'm Dr. Malcolm Tyson, and this podcast will explore innovativeness, which is the quality that results from the combined enhancement of customer experience and employee experience to consistently generate new ideas for products and services in the business. And it is really required because if you're not innovating, you're dying. My goal is to drive individual innovativeness through the shared stories of innovators along the continuum of innovation from discontinuous to continuous. And during this, we sort of ponder the question, if necessity is the mother of innovation, who's the daddy? Well, an innovation strategy is the father of innovation, but as a guest of the show, you and I will explore the innovativeness, which is like the characteristic that gets passed down from parent to child, like eye color or dimples. This podcast sets out to provide a platform for leaders to share and learn how they're using innovative strategies and tools to grow businesses, as well as ignite cultures for innovation with the hopes of sparking innovativeness, inspiring people on their innovativeness journey, and sharpening their leadership skills. I'm honored today to have Everett Shoup. For over 25 years, Everett has been committed to the development of individuals through various roles and activities. He's currently the Vice President of Leadership and Workforce Development at Goodwill of Central and Coastal Virginia, where he's responsible for creating learning, career development, and leadership experience for associates from the front line all the way to the executive team. He worked for 18 years at Goodwill Industries International, and Everett engages professionals to sustain their learning in the workplace and beyond their coaching consulting. And what I'm really excited about is he graduated from the University of Maryland College Park, right, with a Bachelor of Arts in Sociology and earned his master's MBA from Hood College. And in January 2020, Everett earned his doctorate in education from the George Washington University Human and Organizational Learning Executive Leadership Program. Everett, welcome. Welcome.
Thank you, Malcolm. Did I write all that?
You know what? I say the same thing anytime I have to do something and people read the entire thing. I'm like, man, that's a lot of stuff.
That's a lot to say.
But it just caps just kind of, and it's just to me, when I look at these type of things, it's just a snapshot. You've done so much in your career and you've done so much to help leaders. And that's why we're here today. So tell me what you do, like in general, so our audience understands kind of in general how you help the people you work with.
Yeah, so the past 18 years, I was at Goodwill Industries International, and I managed a couple of leadership development programs. They were cohort programs. So people came in and spent either, 6 months or a year developing themselves. They would come in one way and they would leave out a totally different way, which, you know, from a learning professional, that's what we want to see. We want to see behaviors changing. We want to see mindsets changing. We want to see someone come into a program and leave totally different than they came. I had a conversation with one of our CEOs a way back when I was doing research for my dissertation. He was one of my subjects, and he said, "You know what? You have the best job at Goodwill. You get to see people come in, and in a certain way, you get to see them leave a different way. And then when they get that CEO position, you have to think to yourself, you had something to do with that that individual's success." And so that's what I did at Goodwill Industries International. One of the things that I learned in my role at Goodwill Industries International, more the later years, is I was involved in going around with our consultants to help people enhance efficiencies and operational excellence in their donated goods retail space. And one of the things that I realized was we spent a lot of time working on the senior level executives, people who wanted to become CEOs, people who wanted to become vice presidents and directors. And where I saw the biggest opportunity and the biggest challenge was those middle level managers. Those are the ones that are responsible for making all of our money. And yet we did not focus a lot of leadership development activities on that particular group of people, middle-level managers, first-time managers, emerging leaders. And so when the CEO at the local Goodwill in Richmond, Virginia, Goodwill of Central and Coastal Virginia, told me what he, you know, planned to do and what he wanted, how he wanted to bring learning and development into his organization, I raised my hand. I said, can I be a part of that? I want to be a part of that because this is an area that really interests me at this point in my career. And I thought it was going to be my first consulting gig. It turned out, you know, he wanted to hire me. And so I became their VP of Leadership and Workforce Development. And now what I'm doing is taking some of that stuff that I did at Goodwill Industries International and offering it at the local level at this Goodwill. We've created what we call our Goodwill Academy of Virginia, and we are doing leadership development from frontline all the way up to our CEO. And so this has given me an opportunity to really focus on those frontline individuals, identify emerging leaders, help our middle managers and our middle level leaders become more effective and more efficient in their roles. And then, you know, that will help build our pipeline for subsequent roles within our organization up to director, vice president, and eventually CEO, because that's what it's all about. It's about developing this pipeline of leaders, whether they stay with us or whether they go to another organization, have impact there. It's really developing them to succeed.
That's awesome, Everett. And I, a couple of things that you said really resonate with me. And it's the idea, and this is from an innovator, right? The idea that you saw an opportunity and you raised your hand, right? And all the innovators that I've talked to, all the creators that I've talked to, that's typically how it works, right? You saw an opportunity and you said, hey, I'll do it. And it wasn't that this was picked specifically for you, right? It's a situation where you come in contact with a challenge or a problem, say, you know what, I'll try to fix it, right? Mm-hmm. So that really resonates with me because I found myself in that situation many times before. The other thing is, I think because the area that you're talking about, these middle managers, I've seen them referred to as the frozen middle. Right, because they have mandates coming down from the higher ups, executive level, C-suite coming down to them, and then they still have to manage productivity and the personalities and the qualities within their staff. Right, so they're stuck. Right.
Yes.
So I really think it's an innovative approach to take this comprehensive leadership development, because you're right. Most companies focus on the executives that they have. They may do a little bit with some of the middle managers who have shown extraordinary potential, right? But they don't just say, hey, we're gonna train up everybody, right? And so I really think that's amazing. And I want you to now talk to me about, because that approach is really cultivating that culture of innovation. Right. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about what you've seen in terms of the results of the culture from this activity that you're doing.
Yeah. So you know, when we think about leadership, we can't think about leadership without thinking about learning. A lot of people like the, you know, the sexiness of a leadership development program. You know, leadership gets all of the attention. Learning is its I guess its brother or sister that's kind of in the back seat, mm-hmm. not really getting a lot of the attention. And honestly, a lot of the leadership development programs should be grounded in strong adult learning theory. And that's what my dissertation, my doctoral program that was the area that was interesting to me, was the whole adult learning piece and how it feeds the leadership piece. And so we've been focusing a lot on learning and development, trying to help a lot of the middle managers in our organization understand that development and learning is part of their job. And so what's the difference between learning and development, you might ask? So learning is an activity. Learning is, anything that we do to gather knowledge and, in hopes that it'll change our behavior. So reading a book is a learning activity. Attending a conference is a learning activity. Having a conversation with my supervisor can be a learning activity. Development is when we take all of those learning activities and we move forward with an intention, a behavior change. A lot of people think of it as the aha. I had this conversation with my supervisor. I read this book. I attended this program. Oh, I get it now. They all are telling me that I need to change this behavior that I know I've needed to change, but I haven't done anything about it. But now I finally see I'm finally connecting the dots between all of these different, that's development. That's when people develop, they change a behavior. I call it transformative learning. It's really the learning that makes a difference. I can learn a lot of different things. I can, read a book and become more informed on a topic. But when we talk about those actual behavior changes, that's where we find the difference. I'll give you an example of the difference it's making in our culture. So we have this assistant manager, and the first time he came into one of my classes, I greeted him and I was like, "Hey, how's it going? Did you get the pre-work? Did you do your assignment for the class?" And his response was loaded with lots of attitude, and I didn't do the homework. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh, well, this is a person that we have as an assistant manager of our store. And if he's approaching me that way, how is he approaching, the people he leads or other people in the organization? So I kind of put that in the back of my head and, facilitated the workshop. And, in the back of my mind, I'm like, how do I give this feedback and these observations to this guy? Well, one of the things that I do to stay innovative, to learn, is I work in our stores for 8 hours each month. I try to spend 4 hours in two different locations a month. And it just so happened that I picked his store at one point. And he was the manager on duty when mm-hmm. I worked his store. And he was actually kind of joking with me. He's like, "Oh, I get to boss you around now." And then I went to his store, worked in the back room. And what I observed was he was a great leader. He really motivated his team mm-hmm. to get production done, to meet that goals of the day. And, after the day, I went up to him. I was like, what do you want to do next? If you had to pick something, what do you want to do? And he told me, well, I like this position. I could see myself as a store manager at some point. He said, but I think I could be on your team. I like what you do, Everett. You seem to have fun with what you're doing, and I feel like I could work in that type of environment. And I told him, I was like, you know what? If you wanted to work in my type of environment, can I share some observations with you? And this was my end. This was my end.
Right.
Remember the first day you came into one of my classrooms? Well, the way you approached me was not the way I would expect one of my career advisors or learning specialists to approach any of our associates. So let's talk about that communication. He's like, Everett, I'm working on it. Can't you see? I've attended, four of your workshops, and I'm trying to implement all of those things. I said, yes, I see it in action here. Like, mm-hmm. this is awesome. So you know, the point of all that is he was getting the I wasn't sure he was getting the information. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure he was receptive. The way he came into my classroom, I thought he was maybe defiant. I thought he was maybe not wanting to be there. Little did I know he was taking notes. He was taking notes. And when I saw and observed him as a leader in his store, it was different than what I've observed in the past. I have visited him subsequently, and you know, I'm always greeted with, hey, Everett, how's it going? Yeah. You know, here's what we're doing. And we have really good conversations. He is starting to change the culture at his store. And if we can change the cultures at all of our locations, that's going to have a big impact on the culture change in our organization. We just had a workshop on a fairly sensitive topic. You know, we at Goodwill, yeah, our mission is to help people who may have disabilities or barriers to work. You know, we want to make sure we're giving everybody equitable access to a job. And quite honestly, in the United States today, that's not the case for a lot of companies. Sure. Companies will see somebody with a disability or somebody with a past criminal record and say, we're not going to hire you. So this workshop was all about how to work with people who may have disabilities or barriers, which can be an uncomfortable conversation for some people. And this was a 6-day all-encompassing. It was 2 hours at different times, total of probably 12 hours of learning. And the comments that we got were, oh my gosh, Everett, your learning team provided such a safe space for us to explore these concepts. And the inference that I got was they hadn't had that safe space in the past. Yeah. Yeah. And so having that safe space, really being able to delve into a topic that's at the core of our mission, I could tell that, you know, the conversations in our organization are starting to change.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. And I think, you know, organizations that have those safe spaces, it starts slow, but it creates a momentum, right? People start to understand, because I think in the situation that you described about the manager, people process things at different rates, right? And that's the same thing with culture. Culture progresses at different rates, right? Because you have all these different people putting inputs into the culture, right? And so if someone is less comfortable with the topics, or maybe they're an introvert, right? They're not as outgoing. And so the for them, the culture is what it is. But for someone who's more outgoing, who's more wanting to see a culture of innovation, they're going to move at a faster rate. And so I really like how you were able to, first of all, I like the distinction between learning and development, right? Like that's huge, right? Because they get smashed together all the time, right? But the fact that you have a distinction between that, you clearly understand that there's just the sort of intellectual exercise of reading, hearing, whatever the case may be. But that development, that's the intentional progress. That's where you see results. And so, and that's where the culture changes. But you were able to do what I would say a good manager should do, right? You get to learn and ask questions about your people, right? Mm-hmm. Like to me, that's where you draw the best out of them. You understand. That's how you get to motivate people, by understanding them. And if you never took that step and saying, hey, let me ask you about this, right? Like, what do you want to do next? If you never took that step, you wouldn't find out anything else about that person. You would just have that, and I'm going to say a word here, but you would have that bias from your first interaction.
Yes.
Right.
And I did have a bias. I thought this individual was uninterested. I felt like he was not, you know, paying attention to what we were talking about in the workshop. And my bias was corrected because he was.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and because you took that, you took that step to ask the question and dig a little deeper. And to me, those deeper interactions with our staff, with our managers, those are what make a culture innovative. And let's just not say innovative, but that moves the culture forward, which I think is amazing. So talk to me about, in my experience, I've seen similar situations where you try to build an innovative culture, but has there been opportunities where you've had to put boundaries around the culture to kind of protect it from, to protect it from, say you did have someone who was sort of deviant or not wanting to kind of fall in line. Have you had to have any situations where you needed to protect the culture because they're kind of going one way when you're trying to move the culture a different way?
Mm-hmm. You know, I am a firm believer in expectations, sharing expectations. We have 6 core values that drive our work. Those are the boundaries. And aside from that, I don't like to set up too many boundaries. I'm not a boundaries and rules type of guy. In fact, people would say I'm the one who's coloring outside the lines, or I'm the one who's skirting around the boundaries. But, you know, we have those core values in place for a reason. You know, those are our guidance for staying at least within the boundaries of our culture, as you talk about it. Yeah. And as long as you're operating on those core values, then you're successful in moving the culture forward. I will say we've built out those core values now. So all of the leadership training that we offer points back to one of our core values. Nice. Interesting. You know, you talk about innovation. I talk about learning. Learning and innovation are two of our core values.
Nice.
Those are two of our core values that we expect our associates to embody in their work.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think, you know, having core values, clear expectations. You know, when somebody's in violation of that, you know, of course, we take a learning and developmental approach. Mm-hmm. We try to give them all of the resources. Goodwill is a second chance employer, a fair chance employer. We want to make sure that we're giving associates the benefit of the doubt. One of the things that comes up a lot in our conversations is will versus skill. Mm-hmm. Are you willfully, like you said the word deviant, are you willfully doing something that's, you know, against our culture?
Yeah.
Or is it skill, or did somebody never train you on or give you the tools to be able to have a productive conversation with somebody? If it's a skill, that's easy. We have a class for that, or you have a manager to coach you on that. There's all kinds of things we can do from an organizational perspective to wrap our hands around you and support you in getting that skill that you need to be successful. The harder one's the will. If you don't want to do that, or if you feel like that's not important, we still have a class for that. And I'm usually more, more intentional about understanding and watching your behavior and watching your progress forward to make sure that will is not impairing our culture or our organization.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I think between your core values and your expectations, those are kind of the boundaries, right? Those are the boundaries by which you function. And I really like the idea of your learning and development activities pointing back to those things. So it's not just about seeing the values or hearing the values, but you want them to actually, as they're learning, to be learning more about those values and embody it and share it with their staff. So that's excellent. That's really, I guess my question wasn't about, let's point out the what are your punitive activities, right? I really wanted to understand, okay, what are their boundaries? And you hit it. Those are the things that most companies have. And then your work within the learning and development, it kind of fosters that, right? It facilitates going back to those values.
Well, I will say there's, in some organizations, there's a disconnect there. Mm-hmm. You have these organizational values, and then you have the learning and development team going off and creating all these competencies that don't even, you know, point back to the organization. You know, right, they have a really great PowerPoint, and they have a really great framework.
Yeah.
And their framework doesn't even, you know, point back to supporting the core values of the organization. You know, yeah, alignment is important there.
Yeah. Yeah.
The learning and development team can't go off and create their own, you know, competencies or framework for learning that doesn't support the core, you know, the organizational core values, mission, and vision.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a great point. And I've seen that as well, where you have these core values, but nothing that they do on a day-to-day basis really fosters that, right? They're mm-hmm. learning, and I've seen it in government contractors in particular. They would have values within the company, but they're learning, and it does come into that sort of overlap into that will versus skill area, right? Because they have to learn certain skills, but there's no learning that really draws upon the values of the company, whether it be innovation, integrity, mm-hmm. trust, care, whatever the things are. There's no learning around it. It's like, okay, these are what they are, and you interpret it however way you want to,
yes.
right? And that's that puts a lot on managers. Again, these folks in the frozen middle, they have a lot on their shoulders already.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, talk to me more about how you go about your learning and development, and specifically, as we talked on before we started, you're sort of looking back to learn what you are going forward, and how you become a better leader that way.
Yes, yes. So I know we've talked about learning life history and really kind of using that exercise to take a look back at your past experiences to inform how you're leading now.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't, you know, I've only been with this Goodwill for about a year, mm-hmm. and I've just started with the learning life history there. And, you know, the team that I'm starting with is my own team. I, mm-hmm. last week or the week beforehand, I talked with all of my direct reports, and I was like, hey, I want you to participate in this activity. Mm-hmm. It's called a learning life history. I did it with the executive development program that I ran at Goodwill Industries International. And it's just an opportunity for you to really reflect on your past learning experiences, your early learning experiences, those yeah. experiences in your formative years when you're developing those values, when you're starting to formulate some of those things that are important to you. And so what I have people do, there's different versions. I even heard another version the other day. So what I'm used to is having people write a 7 to 8 page paper, you know, that captures their past learning experiences. They can format it however they want to. They can include pictures. I had one year where a woman created a PowerPoint. And I was like, this gets at what we're trying to achieve. So this is awesome. Mm-hmm. I did a scaled down version of like a one pager, kind of what were the events, the people, the activities, and, you know, other things that happened. And you could do that in like a 10-minute sprint exercise. And then I was talking to this one guy on Teams the other day, and he said he does what he calls a 20 under 20 exercise.
Okay.
Think about the 20 most important things that happened to you under the age of 20. I was like, you know what? I'm stealing that, because
right.
that's a kind of half, that's yeah. a medium between yeah. The 7-page paper and the 1-pager that I have people do, the 20 under 20 exercise, I thought was a really good approach to that. But yeah, you know, so that is the first piece of leadership, is really your self-awareness. What drives me as a leader? What is my why? Why do I value this? Why am I stuck on this? You know, when we talk about innovation and innovative leaders or effective leaders, we want leaders who are comfortable with who they are in the workplace and all that entails. That learning life history, or that look back at past experiences, every time I've had people do it. I also use it as a coach. When I coach people, one exercise that I might have them do is a learning life history so that I can figure out maybe what's keeping them from achieving what they want to achieve. And yeah. So we do this exercise and I don't think I've heard anyone not enjoy or get something out of the experience. But what I hear often is, Everett, you know, I was kind of skeptical because I don't give them a lot of boundaries.
Yeah.
I say your learning life is, they always ask me for a copy of mine. I'm like, well, my learning life history is my learning. If I give you a copy of that, then you're going to model yours after mine and yours may contain different things. So they always say it was hard to get started, but once I got started, I couldn't stop. And I wanted to do the next 10 years after that and the next 10 years after that. Yeah. And I'm like, well, what's stopping you from doing that? Go ahead and do the next 10 years and the next 10 years after that. That would be a great exercise. But they all come back and they are like, Everett, I learned so much about myself and what, you know, triggers certain things or what's keeping me stuck in a certain situation. And now that I understand it, I know how to get past it now. Yeah. I know what activities I have to do in order to move myself forward to be a better leader. I will tell you, there's a lot written on learning life history, biographicity, narrative, you know, a lot of that. And one of the earlier scholars in that area, he used it with teachers. He used it so that teachers would understand what they were bringing to the classroom as teachers. So when you had that, you know, not so great teacher or that mean teacher, there's probably something in his or her learning experience that created why she or he is the teacher that they are. Yeah. Likewise, when you have that great teacher, there's probably something in their learning life history that contributed to why they're such a great teacher. And you could probably point to past experiences or all of those experiences adding up to, you know, why they were. And so he did it so that they would understand what they were bringing to the classroom and how they were impacting their learners. And, you know, we've just taken that approach for K through 12 and, you know, think about what I always think about what I'm bringing to the learning experience as a coach, as a VP of leadership and learning. When we design experiences, I always have to think about, you know, what are some of those past experiences that contributed to my values, that contribute to how I design and develop inclusive spaces, those safe spaces that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, that's so good, Everett. And I think, as we talked about before, you know, I think self-awareness is probably foundational to being a good leader, right? And so this really digs deep into that, right? It's not surface level, right? Because you can have a surface level understanding of how you approach things, but when you go back into your history and looking at and specifically childhood, those developmental years, I think that's huge, right? Like, that's huge. And it gives you so much insight into why you do things the way you do them, right? And how you approach them. And then the other thing I think that is so phenomenal. I made up a new word.
There you go. Right. So phenomenal. It'll be in the dictionary in 2 years.
Right. But the idea of understanding your history so you can bring your entire authentic self to a activity, to a job, to a class, right? In your role, you're bringing this to the experience, like understanding that. I read something, it must have been on Instagram, and it was about the artist Eve, right? The rapper Eve. She said she didn't have children because she was working through some stuff. She didn't have children earlier in her life because she just had so much stuff going on, right?
Yeah.
And that's self-awareness, right? That understands, like, she had daddy issues and, you know, boyfriend issues and all this stuff. And she didn't want to project that onto a child.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think the idea of doing that with teachers, as you mentioned in your research, that's so important because those values, because of the values of the teacher, they're going to project them onto those children, like unknowingly. And the child is getting shaped and framed in a certain way. And by the time they get 20, those are so ingrained.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even realize, you know, and unless they go through an exercise like yours where they actually see and go back to that point in their lives and reflect on it and say, you know what? That's why I think about this way. That's why I don't like this type of person, you know, or something like that, right? And so I think that's so good because it's a deep dive.
Yes.
Self-awareness.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is a deep dive. And I just want to kind of accentuate your point about the superficialness. Like when we approach learning and development from a superficial nature, that it's a check the box, or my supervisor wanted me to take this class, or, you know, I'm in here, but I'm not going to give any of myself, whether it's authentic or not. I'm not going to share any of that. That really hurts the learning environment. You know, one of the things that I tell people when they're part of a cohort experience, and, you know, sometimes they're like, hey, Everett, you know, I can't make it to this class. And I'm like, well, you know what? That's a shame because you're the people in your cohort really are learning a lot from you. And I understand you can't make it, but guess what? You're depriving those members of your cohort your perspectives and your learnings and yourself. And it's not to guilt trip them. It is, but it's not.
Right.
You know, but it really is, you know, when you learning is social. This development is social. Yeah. This is what makes the difference between reading the book and then talking about the book.
Absolutely.
I can read the book, but when I talk with you about it and you have a different perspective, the deeper we can dig and the more we can hear each other's perspective and have a discourse and have, you know, conversation, and it's all good. There's no threat behind it. There's no, you know, stuff in the back of it. You know, if we look at today's, not to get political, but if we look at today's landscape, the gridlocks in Congress, the gridlocks in our government is because people are not having those conversations. That's not right. You know, my whole dissertation was on vulnerability. Everybody, that's an interesting word right now. Everybody's talking about vulnerability. Right. Well, what exactly is that? If you can't be vulnerable and open yourself up and share some of those experiences, you're not going to learn. Other people aren't going to learn.
Yeah.
And it really does expand the learning experience versus close it. If you walk into a room and we're learning about a topic and nobody's going to share, you're going to get silence. You're going to get, there's not going to be contribution. There's not going to be a give and take. Whereas if you have a learning experience where everybody's like, hey, this is what I don't know if this is the right answer, but here's my best try at it. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a great thought. What do other people think about this?
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
what causes, you know, the neurons and the everything, you know, biological that gets activated. It gets activated because you know, you and I are engaged. It's not like we have a wall up. That we're not going to engage. So that superficialness is really important to me. I think I've shared with you that I'm trying to write a book, and this is really the crux of that book is how do you become better learners, and how do you become development of others? How do you develop others more effectively? And it does start with you. If you can't develop yourself, how can you develop others?
Right. No, that's such a good point. And I just want to circle back on that, the idea of vulnerability and the concept around it. Like there's sort of this, I know just for me in my career, it's been sort of something that we want to achieve, but it's a connotation of weakness around vulnerability, right? Mm-hmm. And I just don't like that. And I don't know if there's a better word that we can use or something, right? Like it's not being weak. It's just opening yourself up to different ideas, being tolerant, mm-hmm. right? It's I heard one. Here's one I heard just today. I was listening to a podcast. Walls down.
Mm-hmm.
Walls down is like you. It was about negotiation, and it says you need to go into this negotiation with walls down. Meaning, if you're negotiating, there's a point within the negotiation that if it goes too far in my favor, the other person's not going to feel right. If it's too much in their favor, it's not going to go right. So you have to work within those two boundaries with walls down. No agendas around it. No, you know, kickbacks or anything. And I was like, you know what? That's a great way to put this. And that's how we want to show up in our professional lives, even in our personal lives, right? Walls down, right?
Yes.
No hidden agendas. No. And you also talk about you mentioned our political scene and the government. And I've just over the past, I guess, year or so, been learning about local government and stuff like that. I'm getting to that point where I know people in this because I went to school with them, right? I went to school with some of these people. So I'm getting to that age where like, hey, I know you. Oh, I'm the county council member. I'm like, what? So, but
did you choose that?
Exactly. But so I'm talking to these people and I know them and I'm like, you can kind of tell they have agendas. You can kind of tell they have things. The walls are up. They're giving you a smile on their face, but you can kind of sense it. You know, you can kind of sense it. And so it's just interesting because I see it. I see that there is something behind that ask or something behind this conversation. Mm. And it makes you feel weird. At least it makes me feel kind of weird, right? Because it's like, something about that didn't feel right, you know, about that conversation. And as a professional, I don't want to have that, right? I don't want to have, if I'm talking to a staff member or if I'm talking to a direct report, I don't want them feeling like, you know, this conversation has, they're waiting for the other foot to drop, right? I don't want that. And so I'm super glad to hear you talk about vulnerability and this sort of approach that we should take where we bring our authentic selves to a professional environment, but at a deeper level, right? Like not just, this is my personality, take it or leave it. Right.
Yes. Yeah. That's not development. That's saying I have a style and my style is my style and I can't change. Yeah. I like your analogy or the phrase walls down. And think about it when we kind of circling back to that self-awareness or that learning, that past experiences, I may not be able to bring my walls down. Because in the past, when I brought my walls down, I was hurt, or I was, I didn't belong, or I had trauma because my walls were down. And so, you know, what we try to do with the whole vulnerability piece, and, you know, the way I got around vulnerability, you know, the whole topic was to define it.
Yeah.
Brené Brown puts out a good definition. She says vulnerability is uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. Mm-hmm. And those are the three things that I unpacked in my dissertation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the things that I found was the way you talk about your past experiences and the way you talk about yourself and the narrative you put out there has an impact on how you deal with uncertainty. Mm-hmm. If you're used to conquering those uncertainties and you have setbacks, but you don't let that affect you, you're probably more willing to, be in an uncertain space.
Yeah.
From a relationship perspective, you know, if you have taken risks in the past and they haven't paid off or people have hurt you, you know, the whole relationship piece, you're going to be afraid to take risks on people. Yeah. When we talk about innovation, I mean, I can't be everywhere at every day of the moment, every moment of the day. And so I'm I'm trusting and I'm putting a lot of, you know, risk into, you know, the people that I supervise, that they're going to, that they're going to follow through, my peers, other people. Someone who has not developed those relationships are probably going to be more risk averse to the whole concept of that relationship building. And then finally, her piece about emotional exposure. If you take the narrative piece plus the relationship piece, that equals how somebody will be, how somebody's going to share their emotions in the workplace. They may share them, you know, inappropriately, which is not vulnerability. You know, dumping out all over you about everything that's happened to me from, you know, 0 to 52 is not vulnerability. Sharing my emotions in a way that helps you understand how I'm feeling and where I am right now, in a non-threatening way, in a hey Malcolm, here, you know, I just have to tell you I'm feeling something right now. That's going to engage you. That's going to be okay. Everett is sharing an emotion with me. I have to be there for him. I at least have to reciprocate with something else, and therefore that emotional exposure is moving the conversation forward versus had I not shared that exposure, had I not shared that emotion. So you have leaders on all ends of the spectrum. You know, what worries me the most is the person who's not sharing any emotions. Because what that says to me is it's probably bottled up inside. There's stress mounting, and at some point
it's going to let loose.
It's going to burst. It's going to let loose. And so that emotional exposure piece, again, if you've been, if in past experiences you've exposed those emotions and you've been met with, you know, bullying or somebody using that against you, you know, you're probably going to be less likely. On the flip side, if you've shared your emotions and you've gotten that positive response, or somebody's reached out to you, you're going to be better. You're going to be, it's like any other skill. It's, you know, sharing your emotions in a positive way is a level of self-awareness. And that's a skill that needs to be developed across the workforce.
Yeah. That's so interesting, Everett. And like, I've never thought about that, and how we share our emotions is really an indicator in how we feel about those things, right? How we feel those. So that's good. And I'm going to make a mental note in how I do that going forward, right? Like, just really, like, how am I sharing? Because I want to engage, but it could be that I've been, as you said, I may have been holding on to something, and I'm talking about like my wife, right? Like, I've been, might've been holding on to something, and I just, like, you know what? I'm tired of hearing this, and I just dump on it, right? But I need to do it in a way that's more engaging, but I have to be in the moment, right? Because, like, if I'm not in the moment, I'll just do what I normally do, right? Just react. But, so this is good. This is good. So what else you got going on? Got an eye on the clock, and I didn't want to spend too much of your time. This has been super interesting to me, but what else do you got going on? Any parting words for our audience to help them be better leaders?
Yeah. So, in addition to my work at Goodwill of Central and Coastal Virginia, like I said, I'm working on a book about learning and development. Yeah. You know, it's so funny. I always advise people to get an executive coach, and I've never had an executive coach. I have an executive coach now that's helping me write this book. Hopefully we'll see that come to fruition in 25 or 26. You know, I also do consulting work. I learning is my thing. That's what I love. I want people, you know, everybody says, yeah, I'm a lifelong learner. Oh, of course, continuous learning. I do that. And I'm like, do you really do it? Do you do it well? Or do you just do it superficially? And that's really If I had to evangelize about anything, it would be just that learning and development. I'm glad you mentioned taking some of this and, you know, working with your wife, because there's the personal and the professional. And I had somebody who attended a workshop yesterday that I did virtually. And in his comments, I always ask people what they learned and what they're committed to doing. He said, "I'm committing to taking this into my personal life as well." Yeah. And I'm like, good yes. for you. That's yes. awesome. So yeah, you know, just, you know, keep learning yeah. and keep, you know, digging deeper into that learning, really yeah. become a lifelong learner, not a superficial learner.
Yeah. Awesome. So how can people get connected with you? What are your social handles? If you want to share them, go ahead and share them now, Everett.
So you can find me on LinkedIn. That is the only social media I'm on. I had to take a step away because it was consuming too much. I went through yeah. rabbit holes on Facebook, and I said I could spend time writing a book versus right. on Facebook. So I'm not on any other social media. I will say I do have a website out, everettshoop.com. everettshoop.com. That's all you have to type in, and you can see all of the different things that I'm doing through that website.
Awesome. So much information here. Thank you so much, Everett. This has been incredible. I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing your expertise.
Thank you for the invitation. I tell you, Malcolm, every time we interact, it's like I don't want to stop the conversation. I just want to keep talking to you. And yeah. I know we live, you know, fairly close. We need yeah. to have lunch or
yeah.
coffee.
Yeah, we do need to
That's
connect.
What we need to do.
Yes, absolutely. We do need to connect. And I'm going to make that happen. I'm going to have Elizabeth schedule some time with you so we can do that. But so appreciate you so much. And actually, we can talk about this. Maybe we try to do something larger, right? A webinar or something together. So we can talk about that. But again, thank you so much, Everett. Really appreciate you taking the time.
All right. Have a great weekend.
You too, Everett. See ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye.